Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved. Hey there.
Hey,
How are you?
good. So I haven't had a chance to tell you this yet, Sheila. So as you know, I did an interview with David Cohen, who founded TechStars, which is a global accelerator for startup companies. And I talked about some of my physical and mental health issues that I've been working through. It was a really nice experience. Two entrepreneurs listened to the podcast and sent me notes to say that they had gone through very similar things and that it was so helpful to hear
Oh,
my
that's wonderful.
experience.
Wow.
Yeah, I got some positive feedback on social media, and this kind of made me realize that sometimes it is helpful to share what you're going through. And I know for me, I've been trying to connect the dots with a lot of my health issues. And when people talk about their experience, a lot of times it just helps me connect the dots. And it's just helpful for me to articulate what I'm going through when I hear other people articulate it as well.
Yeah, makes sense.
But all to say, Sheila and I thought it might be helpful to talk through something that we both work through, which is obsessive compulsive disorder. For me, it's mostly been triggered since the pandemic. So, since 2020, I've been working through contamination OCD, which is defined as spending an average of an hour or more each day sanitizing things to protect your health. I think that's actually morphed into something that's called disgust-based OCD, which instead of sanitizing and cleaning because you're afraid of getting sick, you sanitize and clean because things just sort of gross you out. And I would say my state of being currently is that I'm not totally sure what I'm afraid of anymore. I think one of the positives from this pandemic is that I've learned a lot about how diseases are contracted and other things that you can pick up through, dirty gym floors and things like that, which I'm actually grateful that I've learned about. I do some practices to prevent those things, but really, I'm no longer afraid of getting COVID. I've had COVID a few times, and I've just sort of accepted that there's no way that I can sanitize myself out of all situations. Yet, I am still spending a lot of time cleaning and sanitizing. So that's sort of where I am. Is there anything you want to share about where you are?
Well, my OCD, which I probably experienced more just like you, not maybe because of COVID, maybe other things, but it's more based in what I think most people probably can understand. I say I'm a checker. Like I check things a few times before I leave the house, and they're usually centered around things that maybe I have a history in terms of something anxiety producing, stressful. Like I check the oven and I check that things aren't plugged in. I actually, when I was younger,
was in my home. It was an apartment, and the boiler exploded, and I had to get out real quick, and it all burned down. So it's like, I think a trauma can sometimes lead to what you're checking is around. And another checking thing, which I've kind of slowed down on, is just checking like that faucets aren't on. And part of that is because I've had situations where there was sometimes flooding and things like that. It's not something that I feel rules my life in any way, shape, or form, except it's just something, you know, I check the door. That's another thing, checking that the door is locked. And it's kind of a ritual. You know, it's like if I check it a certain number of times, then I'm good. I'm good to go. And I am pretty much good to go. By the time I walk down my hallway to the elevator, it's like completely gone from my mind. Am I happy that I have to do this all the time? No. But like I just said, it's not impinging on my movements in any way that I feel like I really wish I could just double down and figure this out. And maybe I'm wrong in approaching it that way.
So I've been thinking about this with my own stuff, which is, you know, the amount of time that I'm spending cleaning and sanitizing is definitely far less than it was during the pandemic. But it's still occupying my thoughts more than I would like. So, and I think that if I'm objective about it, I think that the stress about it is taking a toll on my health. And so do you feel that the stress about what might happen if you don't check is negatively impacting your life more than you would like? Or
I would have to say it isn't really.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it couldn't reach newer heights depending on the circumstances. I probably had more anxiety surrounding it in the situation that I was in over the last few years before I moved, where I was actually living in an apartment with my daughter-in-law son and then my grandson. And the ramifications of, oh no, if I don't check the doors locked, or if I don't check that I didn't leave the oven on, you know, that probably sat in me longer than now, where it's not like I am not concerned about that, but it had such a personal impact that it probably did bring the anxiety level up a little bit more. And that's what I mean situationally. I don't know if you have that feeling. It can kind of go back and forth depending on your situation, where you are, the gym that you go to, and how you feel about it. And when you go home, if you have to clean more because of it. I don't know if that's a good analogy. So,
well, I mean, there is some of that. Like, I went to this gym that was just objectively gross. Whoever was cleaning it was not doing a very good job. And it was a very high volume place. But for me, it's more about protecting my quote unquote safe space. I would say I live a quote unquote normal life. I think a lot of people, when they think of OCD, they picture Howard Hughes with extremely long fingernails and unwilling to leave their house and things. Or on the other end of the spectrum, they think because they like to clean 4% more than the average person that they have OCD. And most people who have OCD are in the middle of the spectrum. And actually, as you were telling me your symptoms, I would say first that I'm not a medical professional. I have just sort of hit the tip of the iceberg of learning about OCD myself. I say that with this caveat. I'm not actually sure that anyone would say that you do have OCD, Sheila, based on what you said, because part of what determines whether you have OCD is the amount of distress that it's causing in your life.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And so it'd be interesting to revisit some of those definitions under what you described. But anyhow, for me, it's more about my safe space. So I live a very normal life outside of my home. I have a hard time giving up the place to come back to where I know who's mm-hmm. touched everything and where stuff has been cleaned and all those things. And so for me, the things that cause stress is like, I'm going to visit my family. Somebody needs to come in to my house to clean out a dryer vent. It's something that the homeowners association does on certain days. So I have like no choice as to when they come. And that totally stresses me out because people are going to be in my house when I'm not there. And I don't know what they're going to be doing and what they're going to be touching and all those things. So people coming into my house causes stress. And then if I'm doing something like traveling and I'm on a plane, which planes are just gross, and then I'm coming home, then that causes stress too, because it's like, what am I bringing into my home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a couple of things as you were speaking about this specific thing that you're talking about when you're gone. There's mm-hmm. a few things to me that seem tied into that. Having somebody come into your space when you're not there. I don't like that. I think most people don't like that because for a number of reasons you've identified, you don't know what they're touching, but it's still, it's an intrusion. And so I don't know that you can separate out the difference between your fear of the kind of contamination that they may bring in or just having somebody in your space when you're not there yeah. and you have no knowledge of what they've done. And, you know, yeah. you just, the other thing, like, cause I was going to ask you about outside your home. So you just talked about how airplanes are gross, which I think we've all received quite an education from COVID. And there's a many more of us that look at our environments outside of our home differently than we used to in terms of acknowledging how they're petri dishes. But do you have the ability when you're outside to kind of turn the volume down on it? You just really like that safe space that you know you can come back to and relax.
I mean, when I'm outside my home, well, when I'm outdoors in particular, even during COVID, when I had a lot of stress, I had virtually no anxiety outdoors. And that's mm-hmm. actually a godsend for me in all aspects of mm-hmm. life in general. You know, I've done a lot of thinking about what I want to change and what I am actually glad that I've adopted. And I think the positives are that I have a hard time relaxing when I'm sitting down. That's just sort of my personality. And for me, my rituals that I do for my OCD feel meditative, like when cleaning in general feels meditative mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way for me to wind down from the day. And I think that there's a part of that that is beneficial. The thing that I don't like is the level of anxiety. So,
or maybe the feeling, I don't want to put words in your mouth, the feeling that I have to do this. It's like not a choice.
Yeah. Right.
Because when you were talking about the meditative aspect of it, I really feel, and I felt it sometimes myself, like washing dishes. It is soothing to some extent to stand there and have a goal and have something to do. And it's like, it can be meditative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Folding the laundry, which is a, you know, part of cleaning something, can maybe do the same thing. And
yeah, actually, this housekeeping service that we had in Boulder, their whole business was that they were a yoga ashram, and the yogis who were training would actually clean homes as a part of their meditation training. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's definitely some meditative mm-hmm. positive qualities mm-hmm. of it, but I think exactly what you said, which is feeling like I have to do it. So, yeah. You know, it's one thing at 4 PM when I'm feeling like my brain is sort of fried to spend 20 minutes cleaning to start winding down. It's another thing to come home from a trip and get home at 10 PM at night and feel like I've got to clean until 2 AM. So I can go to bed.
Right.
That's an exaggeration of 4 hours, but you know, I would say an hour is more realistic. And you know, the other thing is that logically I know that if I'm already short on sleep, just going to bed is going to be much more beneficial to my health than staying up for 1 to 2 hours to sanitize before I go to bed. I mean, I know that definitively, but I feel like I can't stop. And knowing that I can't stop actually causes me anxiety. So for instance, going back to this trip that I'm making, I'm going to get there pretty late and I have anxiety that I'm going to feel compelled to sanitize my Airbnb before I go to bed and that I'm not going to be able to wake up to spend time with my family in the morning. So it's like a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from what I understand, again, in looking at articles about OCD, just for my own personal benefit and just being a human being in the world and getting some education along those lines, it's that conundrum. Because, of course, the problem solver in me was immediately going to step in and start saying things, you know, so get an earlier flight and get there earlier, and then that solves that problem. But I understand the pushback is, but that's not really solving the overall problem. It's just kind of putting a Band-Aid on that particular situation. And, right. You know, the other suggestion in terms of your space, see if you can negotiate so nobody comes in when not there. And you, even if you have to incur additional costs. But again, these are solutions to something that maybe you would prefer to work on changing overall. So that you're just not constantly having to come up with solutions through the rest of your life.
And part of it also becomes addicting, coming up with solutions, because I'm somebody who likes to come up with solutions. And so figuring out how I'm going to do simple things without touching anything, or how I can... I'm having a hard time thinking.
No, of I understand. I understand your point. I do. Here's a question that came to mind. Because you said, you know, I'm a problem solver and it gives me something to do, but, and I'm going to use therapy speak, I'm hearing that you think it's wrong to feel that way, that you enjoy actually solving those problems. And I'm going to come back and say, so what are the downsides of that? Not being quote normal?
Well, that's a downside, which I'm working on thinking through in my head, because some of this, it's like some of my behavior, I'm not actually compelled to change. And I'm not sad that I am doing that behavior. But I had this experience with my mom, and I don't think she'd mind me sharing this, but I was doing something that I wanted to do. And she said, oh, I can't wait till you get this OCD under control so that you can stop doing that.
Bingo.
I'm not doing that because of my OCD. Like, I enjoy doing
it. I'm sorry I said bingo. Like, that didn't mean that. But that's what I mean. Can you separate out what really is impacting on you and your psyche versus the perception of others? And not just the perception, like, the inconvenience to others or whatever. And I'm not saying others should not enter the picture. I'm just saying it seems so intrinsically tied together.
Yeah. I think I have a pretty objective view of it and can parse that out. And it's still, I hate the feeling that I get when I realize that someone's feeling sorry for me for something that I'm not feeling sorry about myself.
Mm-hmm. I like that statement that you just made. It resonates with me, and I think it probably resonates with a lot of people. I mean, that really is, you know, maybe say it again.
I hate the feeling that I get when I realize that someone is feeling sorry for me for something that I am not feeling sorry for about myself.
Yeah. I have no solution. I don't even, you know, but it's a common problem, I think.
Yeah.
or maybe not common. We keep using, like you were using normal and I'm using common now. And when I say stuff like that, I rail against it inside because it's like, there is no common, there is no normal. We're all individuals. And when things that you do impact on other people in such a negative way that it impacts on you and it impacts on them, et cetera, then yeah, those are really difficult problems. When it's just something you're doing and then the perception of others kind of impacts on how you're feeling about it, that I'm not saying it eliminates it as a problem, but it makes it a little bit, to me, bringing it closer to the middle of the spectrum in terms of the seriousness of, oh, I have to address this immediately. But again, I'm not a doctor, so.
Yeah. Well, and I think that one of the benefits that I've received from having this is that it is encouraging me to be able to just say, this is my preference. It may be abnormal, but this is my preference. And being able to say that without apology.
Is the concern in some of this conversation around your OCD on the part of people who really care about you is that it's having you make decisions in things that are totally not just about sanitizing things or the time it takes. Like you're making life decisions and OCD is ruling it.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's a concern about that from people in my life. I think that...
And do you think it's valid? I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but do you think it's valid?
I think it's a fair question for them to be asking.
Okay.
I may have 10 reasons for why I don't want to do something. And one of them is because of my OCD. So sometimes it's hard to decide how loud that is.
Yep.
And I think that sometimes there's 10 reasons why I don't want to do something, but OCD is the loudest reason.
Mm-hmm.
But for me,
that's an easy reason if it's loud.
Yeah. I think for me, the things that I want to change is that I don't want to feel like I have to do things when logically I know that getting sleep is more important. I'd like to be able to just sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to easy solutions for that. Like one example is I don't like to get in my own bed before I take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a reasonable thing because I spend a lot of time in public pools and public pools are kind of gross.
I think a lot of us feel that way.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm so tired that I will be better off going to bed without taking a shower. And so the other night I was so tired and I just slept in the guest bedroom and, took my socks off when I got out of the bed so that I didn't track whatever it was around my house. And that felt like a very easy solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think
one. I'm sorry. And I know sometimes you push back at me when I say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. It sounded like a reasonable one because this is one thing I want to interject because you're talking about sleep and sleep is so tied up in your brain. So it's like, it's not as if you said to yourself, don't clean, get in the bed. And the minute you got in the bed and covered yourself up, you would go to sleep. And you just made that choice to get in the bed and go to sleep. Like your brain is just going to keep buzzing.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's any solution to that unless, you know, you go to sleep by like taking something. I'm not getting into, you know, knocking yourself out, which I know you don't. Like, unless we had the ability to get in our bed to go to sleep and completely like cut off our brain functioning.
Yeah.
the thoughts, not the whole functioning. That would be pretty interesting if our brain function just stopped when we went to sleep. We know what would happen with that. But anyway, trying to introduce a little bit of levity here. Are you understanding what I'm saying about that? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can leave if you had a problem with leaving, like me checking and whatever, it's not so intrinsically tied with, to go to sleep, you kind of have to relax.
Right. I feel most relaxed when I feel clean. But I actually think the number one thing that I want to change, and I've made some progress on this, but I want to get better at it, is just frankly having the courage to say to people, you know, honestly, I have OCD, and that's something that's hard for me. I'm willing to work with you on this, but if there's a way that we don't need to do that, then that would be my preference. So as one example, I own a condo in Big Sky, Montana. My neighbors, who have an identical unit to mine, have had a hard time selling their unit. There's four units, and my neighbor came up with this idea of selling all four to one of the organizations that run some of the large hotels, which are having a hard time finding housing for their middle and upper management. Mm-hmm. And the appeal would be that there would just be one HOA, and they could own all of them, and it would just be easy for them. And I thought that was a good idea. Then I started thinking through all the people who are going to be coming through my house if I'm selling that house.
I was going to say the weeds. Okay. Now I'm understanding why you started talking about that.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out the deal thing versus, so it would present even more situations like you described at the beginning of this, where people are coming in your house.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to go back there. So, I mean, selling it when you're not going to be there anymore. I did it. I tried to solve it. Like, you know, making the decision and then just not going back when it's in the process of being sold.
Right.
And I'm sorry.
No. And there's many reasons why I don't like people in my home, which have nothing to do with my OCD, because I've had terrible luck with people like accidentally shutting off my refrigerator and stuff like that. But to be honest, my OCD, like that condo in Big Sky, is like my ultimate safe space. It's the only space that I fully control. And so giving that up feels scary to me. And I would like to be able to say to my neighbor who is helping put together this deal, this causes a lot of stress for me because I have OCD, and I feel ashamed of that.
Right.
And I want to come up with all these other excuses, and I just want to get comfortable saying this is uncomfortable.
You're saying it now, and I understand even more than I have in the past why you wanted to do this podcast, because you're outing yourself.
It's funny,
which is a good thing. I don't want to use that
language
because it doesn't seem appropriate. So I reboot on that.
No. I actually felt it was appropriate. I think that's right based on my context. And it's funny because this feels easier for me to do this, to project it out to a lot of people who I know, but maybe even a lot more people that I don't know. It feels easier than admitting it in a one-on-one conversation.
Yep. And And as you said at the beginning of this conversation, when you were recounting the reaction you got to your podcast with David Cohen, there's a lot of people out there that would understand it, including maybe the people who are interested in pairing with you to sell your Big Sky condo. Or not. I don't know. No answers, even though I acted as if I did a little while ago, but you know, it's just the problem solving thing in me.
It's always good to hear your reflections. I guess maybe that is part of why I wanted to do this podcast. And I would say if there's anybody out there that thinks they may have OCD or would like to learn more about it, there's a couple resources that have been particularly helpful to me. There's a podcast called The OCD Stories, and there's a book called Freedom from OCD, those two things have been helpful to me. There's also a lot of research coming out about the link between gut health and OCD, as well as
Yeah. Interesting.
And gut health and mental health in general. I don't have any particular resources to point people to, but that's just something to Google if you're interested.
Yep.
There's also a fair amount of research coming out about hormone health and OCD, as well as thyroid issues and mental health in general. So I think I've had some form of OCD my entire life. I have a family history of OCD behavior. And there were things when I was a little kid that I can remember, like being obsessive about staying in my routine and doing things in a particular order, that I think were indicative of the fact that I've always had OCD, but it's never taken over my life like it did during the pandemic. I think that the pandemic triggered it, but I think it was heightened by the fact that I had hormone and thyroid health issues. I'm convinced of that, and gut health issues, which were all intertwined. And I shared this before and might regret sharing my email publicly. Please don't spam me, but my email is Elizabeth@Mergelane, MERGELANE, Elizabeth@Mergelane.com. So if you're looking for more resources, I'm not a medical professional, but I'm happy to point you in the right direction.
Or if you're okay with this, if people similar to, again, your statement at the beginning of this, want to share how this helped them with their stuff.
Yeah.
And they have always you know, we could, you know, do another thing about the reaction and the stories that people have had from listening to this.
Yeah, I like that idea. That's really nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, thank you for being so honest, Elizabeth, really. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I have to say, your honesty is always impressive, and your courage in just wanting to face this stuff in the best forum for you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for listening, as always. And you shared a few things that I'm pretty sure you've never shared publicly. So thank you for your courage.
Oh God,
as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people know when it takes a little time to leave the house. Wait, you got to check the oven. Actually, what I would do is I would make other people check it. And then I'd be good to go, because it's like, it's not on me. So there's that element is in there too. Like my responsibility, that's intertwined in there, but that's a whole nother podcast.
Well, in our next episode, we can report back on the research we did to determine whether you meet the definition of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I'm going to be Googling.
Yeah. I'll leave that to you, because I'm sure you're going to do it. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. I don't know. There's a compliment in there, maybe.
No, I don't know. That was actually.
Oh, I know there is.
Yeah.
Oh, I am the Google queen. I am the Google.
Yes.
We used to call it Google stalking when we worked together.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I don't want to use that term stalking anymore either. You know, I want to stay away from anything that is not the right term to use. So on that note, maybe it's time to just say goodbye.
I think so.
Okay.
Bye. All right. Bye.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.